This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, Nine from the Nine Worlds, by Rick Riordan. Read for you by Paul Bamer, Robertson Dean, Stephen Graybill, Nick Chamian, Devin Sorvari, Larry Heron, Sheila Birmingham, Will Dameron, and Bonnie Turpin.
Asgard. Just Another Decapitated Head by Odin. My Inherjar have a saying. Some days you are the axe. Some days you are the decapitated head. I like it so much, I'm having t-shirts made for the Hotel Valhalla gift shop. As the All-Father, God of Wisdom, King of the Aesir, and Ruler of all Asgard, I am usually the axe. Strong, powerful, in control. Usually. But one day, not long ago, well, let's just say things went awry. It started when Hunding, Bellhop of Valhalla, informed me of a disturbance in the feast hall of the slain. Disturbance? I asked as I opened the hall door. Splat! A food fight, Lord Odin! I peeled a slab of uncooked Saehrimnir from my cheek. So I see. It wasn't just any food fight, it was a Valkyrie food fight. Above me, a dozen or more airborne choosers of the slain swooped and dive-bombed while pelting one another with feast beast meat, potatoes, bread, and other edibles.
Enough!
My voice sent a shockwave through the hall. All fighting stopped.
Drop your weapons!
Saehrimnir steaks and other foods hit the floor.
Now clean up this mess and think about what you've done.
As the Valkyries moved to find mops, I beckoned to Hunding, who was cowering in a corner.
Walk with me.
We wove our way through Hotel Valhalla, the eternal home of my Inherjar, mortals who had died heroically. My noble Valkyries are responsible for whisking the deceased here, where the brave warriors trained to fight on the gods' side against the giants at Ragnarok. The Day of Doom. If you wish to know more about this afterlife program, refer to my informational pamphlet, Dying to Fight. I paused at the bottom of a stone staircase. Since the death of Gunilla, captain of the Valkyries, some of my handmaidens have become feisty. I touched my face where the raw meat had struck. I had hoped the Valkyries would choose a new captain themselves. Since they have not, I must intervene. Hunding looked relieved.
Do you have Gunilla's replacement in mind, Lord Odin?
Sadly, I did not. My first choice, Samira Al-Abbas, had opted to become my Valkyrie in charge of special assignments instead. I had no second choice yet. Tell the Thanes to bring candidates to the Thing Room in 1 hour. I'll be scanning the Nine Worlds from Hlidskjalf, if you need me. And Hunding.
Yes, Lord Odin.
Don't need me. I mounted the stairs to my pavilion and sank onto Hlidskjalf, the magic throne from which I can peer into the Nine Worlds. The seat cradled my posterior with its ermine-lined softness. I took a few deep breaths to focus my concentration, then turned to the worlds beyond. I usually begin with a cursory look-see of my own realm, Asgard, then circle through the remaining eight. Midgard, realm of the humans, the elf kingdom of Alfheim,
Vanaheim, the Vanir god's domain. Jotunheim, land of the giants. Niflheim, the world of ice, fog, and mist. Helheim, realm of the dishonorable dead. Nidavellir, the gloomy world of the dwarves. And Muspelheim, home of the fire giants. This time, I didn't make it past Asgard. Because goats. Specifically, Thor's goats, Marvin and Otis. They were on the Bifrost, the radioactive rainbow bridge that connects Asgard to Midgard, wearing footy pajamas. But there was no sign of Thor, which was odd. He usually kept Marvin and Otis close. He killed and ate them every day, and they came back to life the next morning. More disturbing was Heimdall, guardian of the Bifrost. He was hopping around on all fours like a deranged lunatic.
"So, here's what I want you guys to do,"
he said to Otis and Marvin between hops.
"Cavort, frolic, frisk about. Okay?"
I parted the clouds. "Heimdall! What the hellheim is going on down there?"
"Oh, hey, Odin!"
Heimdall's helium-squeaky voice set my teeth on edge. He waved his phablet at me.
"I'm making a cute baby goat video as my Snapchat story. Cute baby goat videos are huge in Midgard. Huge!"
He spread his hands out wide to demonstrate.
"I'm not a baby," Marvin snapped.
"I'm cute?"
Otis wondered. "Put that phablet away and return to your duties at once!" According to prophecy, giants will one day storm across the Bifrost, a signal that Ragnarok is upon us. Heimdall's job is to sound the alarm on his horn, Gjallar, a job he would not be able to perform if he were making Snapchat stories.
"Can I finish my cute baby goat video first?"
Heimdall pleaded.
"No."
"Aww."
He turned to Otis and Marvin.
"I guess that's a wrap, guys."
"Finally," Marvin said. "I'm going for a graze." He hopped off the bridge and plummeted to almost certain death and next day resurrection. Otis sighed something about the grass being greener on the other side, then jumped after him.
"Heimdall," I said tightly. "Need I remind you what could happen if even one Jotun snuck into Asgard?"
Heimdall hung his head.
"Apologetic face emoji."
I sighed. "Yes, all right. A movement in Hotel Valhalla's garden caught my eye. I looked closer and immediately wished I hadn't. Legs, spraddled and wearing nothing but a pair of leather short shorts, Thor was bending, twisting, and squat-farting. Strapped to his ankle was a device shaped like a Valknut, a design of three interlocking triangles. "What in the name of me is my son doing?" I asked in bewilderment.
"Who? Thor?"
Heimdall looked over his shoulder.
"He's warming up for a jog through the Nine Worlds."
"A jog. Through the Nine Worlds," I repeated.
"Yep. If he logs 10 million steps on his fitness knut, that thing around his ankle, he earns a cameo appearance on a Midgard television show. That's why I had his goats. He said they'd slow him down."
"That's ridiculous."
"Not really. Those goats aren't exactly speedy. Unless they're plummeting, that is."
"Not what I meant. Never mind." I cupped my hands around my mouth. "Thor! Thor!"
Heimdall tapped his ears.
He's listening to rock.
Rock and roll?
No, just rock.
Boulders, gravel, stones. Heimdall paused.
Or did he say the stones?
Thankfully, a messenger raven swooped into the pavilion just then to summon me to the Thane meeting.
At last,
I muttered as I headed to the Thing room. A moment of sanity. I opened the conference room door to find my trusted advisors twirling in their plush leather chairs.
Whoever spins the longest without getting sick wins!
One of the Erics yelled.
Thanes! I roared. Come to order!
My advisors quickly pulled their chairs to the table, except for Snorri Sturluson, who staggered to the nearest trash bin and threw up. I took my seat at the head and nodded at Hunding.
Bring forth the candidates.
The first nominee was Freydis, daughter of Erik the Red. Freydis had been a fine Valkyrie back in the day, but judging from her hunched back, vacant smile, and milky eyes, the years had not been kind to her.
Erik, I observed. Your daughter is literally ancient.
Erik pointed at me with double-finger spears.
Ancient equals experience, am I right?
Not in this case.
I thanked Freydis for her past service and sent her hobbling on her way. Next was Kara, a well-meaning but clumsy oaf who giggled incessantly. She'd only become a Valkyrie because of her centuries-old relationship with Helgi, manager of Hotel Valhalla.
A nice girl?
Yes. Worthy of leading my female warriors? No. I replied to Helgi's hopeful look.
Boudica, the fearsome queen of the Celts and a Valkyrie since the year 61, was Davy Crockett's choice.
She barged in, brandishing her sword, swept the room with an impatient glance, then flung her head back and shrieked with rage.
I was told there would be snacks!
She beheaded the nearest floor lamp and stormed out. I pinched the bridge of my nose.
At least the next candidate can't be any worse.
The next candidate was worse. A decrepit crone with stringy gray hair and filthy ragged robes shambled into the room. Her body odor hit me the same time recognition did. I shot out of my seat and summoned Gungnir my magic spear.
You!
The hag gave a phlegm-thick cackle.
Oh, remember me, do you, old one-eye?
I banished you from the Valkyries centuries ago.
I glared at my thanes.
Who dares drag this witch before me?
Oh, don't yell at them, she chided. When I heard you were choosing a new Valkyrie captain, I couldn't resist showing up.
She coughed up something nasty into her palm and wiped it on her robes.
Begging your pardon, Lord Odin,
Hunding whispered. But
who is she?
Hladgunr, I growled. Daughter of Hel, granddaughter of Loki. She plagued Valhalla with her tricks.
Hladgunr whooped.
Remember that time I left a trail of nuts to lead Ratatosk to Leyritter?
That was you?
Snorri cried.
The squirrel's insult soured Hadrun's milkmead.
He buried his face in his hands.
Dinner was ruined!
What can I say?
She winked at me,
Pranks are my thing.
The air around her rippled, and she began to shrink. Alarm bells rang in my head. Hladgunr inherited Loki's deceitful ways, not his power to shapeshift. Screeching with laughter, the impostor transformed into a bald eagle.
Utgard Loki!
A current of fear spread through the Thanes when I spoke the name of the King of the Mountain Giants. I thrust the business end of Gungnir at the bird. How did you gain entrance to this world? The eagle leered. An unexpected opportunity presented itself. I took it. I grimaced. Heimdall and his baby goat video.
I'm not a baby!
Marvin yelled from somewhere outside the hotel.
And Hladgunr?
I demanded.
She came to me when you banished her.
Horrible B.O.
But a great source of intel right up to the end. Her end, that is.
Utgard Loki drew a wingtip across his throat.
Impersonating her was a cinch.
Embarrassing you in front of your thanes? That was an added bonus.
I'd heard enough. I reared back and threw my spear. It never misses, yet Gungnir sailed past the eagle.
How?
Utgard Loki crowed with laughter.
The mighty Odin foiled by a bit of distortion magic. This is a good day.
I blinked and saw the eagle was no longer on the table. Perhaps it never had been, but by an open window. He saluted me with a wing, then soared off toward the distant mountains of Jotunheim. I sank into my chair.
Clear the room!
The Thanes beat a hasty retreat. In the silence that followed, one thought rolled through my mind.
Some days you are the axe. Some days you are the decapitated head. I'd never felt more decapitated in my life. I didn't like it. So, I chose to become the axe.
Hunding!
Stop skulking in the hallway and get in here!
The bellhop poked his head around the doorway.
I wasn't skulking, he said defensively. I was lingering.
Come in.
I need you to do three things.
One, find a way to track Thor's fitness knut. Report his whereabouts at all times.
Won't he just circle the worlds in order?
I made a face.
Thor's sense of direction is terrible. His path will likely be erratic. Moving on. Two, have squads of Inheriar launch surprise attacks on the Bifrost. I want to know that Heimdall is on guard.
Very good, sir. And the third thing?
Inform the Thanes that as of tomorrow, I will be unavailable for a while.
I transformed my appearance from a rugged one-eyed god of wisdom to a beautiful two-eyed woman clad in chain mail.
I will be living with my Valkyries to decide for myself which of them deserves to be captain.
Hunding raised a hairy eyebrow.
An idea from Utgard Loki, Lord Odin?
Wisdom can be gleaned from any source, if one only looks hard enough.
I paused, thinking.
Let's put that on a t-shirt. And Hunding...
My lord.
I transformed back into my true form. Download cute baby goat videos to my phablet. I must learn what all the fuss is about.
Midgard. This is why I hate clothes shopping. By Amir Fadlan. Amir, you look hideous. My fiancé, Samira Alabas, stared at my outfit in horrified disbelief. Really? I looked down at myself. But it's a tux. A baby blue tux? With a matching ruffled shirt and floppy bow tie? I said defensively. My uncle loaned it to me. I think it'll impress your grandparents, don't you? It's Jid and Bibi's 50th wedding anniversary. Sam sputtered. You can't wear... Samira. My father emerged from the kitchen. He is pulling your leg. Sam's reddish-brown eyes blazed dangerously, and I suddenly realized that playing a practical joke on a Valkyrie might not be the best idea I ever had. I'm heading over to Blitzen's shop right now. I hastily reassured her. I'll pick out something appropriate, I promise. I'll go with you, just to be sure, Sam said. My father cleared his throat and raised his eyebrows. Don't worry, Dad, I said. Blitz will be there to chaperone us. Good to know, my father replied, but I was actually going to suggest you change before you leave. Oh, right. Give me 5 minutes. I ran up to my room and began undressing. Then I froze. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw a shadow move across my window. Someone was on the fire escape. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. Heart pounding, I tiptoed over and inched open the curtain. A pigeon swooped past my face. I leaped back, tripped, and landed on my butt. Stupid bird, I muttered. I quickly swapped the tux for faded jeans and a white t-shirt, then hurried back downstairs. Sam was on her cell phone. Odin, she mouthed at me. She listened for a moment, then hung up and gave me an apologetic look. I have to go. A last-minute Inherje extraction. It shouldn't take too long. I'll meet you at Blitzen's. Don't buy anything until I get there. I walked her to the door. Sam looked left and right, then leaped into the air and flew off. I will never get used to that, I murmured. Unlike most mortals, I can see through the glamour, the magical force that disguises reality. I can thank or curse Magnus Chase for making that possible. He thought it best that I know about my fiancé's Valkyrie life. I wondered what my father would have made of Sam's sudden disappearance. A super-fast Uber pickup, maybe? Having my mind open this way wasn't always fun. For example, on my way to Blitzen's Best, I passed Thor. I saw him for what he really was, a sweaty, muscle-bound, red-headed deity in leather shorts that left little to the imagination. Though the way other pedestrians hurriedly moved aside, it's possible they caught a glimpse of the real Thor, too. Blitzen's Best, the upscale clothing store owned and operated by Sam's dwarf friend, helped erase the image of Thor from my brain. I'm not much of a clothes horse. Just say no to the hipster man-bun look, was my motto. But Blitz's colorful designs spoke to me. They didn't seem to call to anyone else, though. I was alone in the store. Hey, Blitz, you here? A thin man with close-set eyes, patchy light brown hair, and a sparse mustache emerged from the back room. He curled his hands against his chest like a rodent squatting on its haunches.
The dwarf is not in right now, he informed me in a thin, reedy voice. I am Stan. May I help you with your purchase?
To me, shopping for clothes meant grabbing the right size of jeans from a lopsided pile. I wasn't used to having a salesman offer to help, and I'd never known Blitz to have an employee. Then again, I was on Newbury Street, home of Boston's most exclusive boutiques, where customers expected personal service. So I went along, cautiously. Sure, I guess. I selected a pair of dark blue trousers from a nearby rack. I'm going to a 50th anniversary party, so I'm looking for something special to wear.
Special? Yes.
He took the trousers from me and returned them to the rack.
These are not special.
I was pretty sure Blitzen would disagree, but I didn't say anything. Stan wrung his hands as his beady eyes darted over my frame.
Just as I thought. You are trim, tall but not too tall. Your legs are slender.
He looked up at me. I have something special that will fit you like a second skin. Wait here. I'm not going to lie. When Stan disappeared into the back room, I almost bolted. The guy gave off a seriously weird vibe, but the party was that night. If I didn't get something in this store, I'd end up wearing the blue tux. Better to risk Stan's weirdness over Sam's wrath. Stan returned with a pair of light tan leather pants. He caressed the material, which was unlike any leather I'd ever seen.
Try these.
He extended his arms, giving me no choice but to take the pants.
Put them on, and you will never take them off.
I hope you mean I'll never want to take them off, I corrected.
You will wear them forever.
Stan's voice had taken on a feverish edge that made me regret not bolting. I decided to appease him by trying on the pants. I'd claim they didn't fit or were too expensive or something, and get out of there quick. I held up the pants to examine them in the bright lights of the dressing room. They looked form-fitting, like skinny jeans, tapered at the ankle and snug through the hips and thighs. The peculiar leather was lightweight and papery in feel. They were slip-on, with no zipper, just a single ivory button at the waist. Poking out of the single deep front pocket was a scrap of wrinkled yellow paper with a symbol scrawled in red-brown ink.
You have not put them on yet.
I nearly jumped out of my skin. Stan was just outside the curtain. I hadn't heard him approach. One sec. I shoved the paper back into the pocket, kicked off my sneakers, and slipped out of my jeans. My cell phone fell to the floor. I debated texting Samira to tell her to hurry up, then remembered she was doing her Valkyrie thing. I put my phone back in my jeans and laid them on the dressing room bench. Then I stepped into the tan pants, pulled them up, and fastened the button.
Vit!
With a sound like a vacuum nozzle sucking against a piece of paper, the pants suddenly constricted around my body.
Hey, what the heck?
The curtain flew open. Stan stood there, circling his hands in the air.
You have put them on, willingly, with your own hands.
Yeah, and now I'm taking them off, immediately, with force. My fingers scrabbled at the button, but it wouldn't unfasten. I shoved my thumbs into the waistline and tried to wriggle free. The leather stuck to me as if it had been painted on. I yanked at the ankles, clawed at the sides. The pants didn't budge or tear.
The pocket. Check the pocket.
Stan stared at the pants, which did nothing to ease my growing alarm.
There's nothing in it but an old piece of paper.
Stan stepped closer.
Check again.
He enunciated each word in a voice no longer thin and reedy, but deranged and dangerous.
Now. Okay, okay. Chill out. I'm checking.
I slipped my hand inside and blinked. My fingers touched a coin, a half dollar, judging by the size. I withdrew it and gulped.
Is this gold?
Stan thrust out his cupped hands.
Give it to me.
Dazed, I dropped it into his palms.
The pocket,
Stan whispered.
Again.
I pulled out a second gold coin, then a third and a fourth. As soon as I removed one, another took its place. Within seconds, gold coins were spilling from Stan's hands onto the floor. He crouched and started running his fingers through the glittering pile. I edged toward the front of the store.
Okay, well, this has been fun, and you're obviously busy, so if you could tell me how to take off the pants, I'll be on my way. You cannot go,
Stan said, still playing Mr. Moneybags with the coins.
Not as long as you wear the Nobrok.
Nobrok? What does that mean? Stan glanced at me and smiled slowly.
Necropants.
I blanched. I'd seen enough crime dramas to know that the prefix necro meant death.
Just to be clear, Nobrok means death pants?
I swallowed hard.
Are they going to kill me?
No, you misunderstand.
Relief flooded me. For a moment there, I thought,
Nobrok are pants made from the skin of a dead person.
I clapped my hands over my mouth to keep from vomiting.
These necropants have been in my family for generations.
Stan went on.
They were created by my ancestor, a mighty sorcerer skilled in dark magic. The symbol on the paper is a powerful spell, written in the blood of the deceased. The spell, it makes gold coins. Forever.
Then take the paper, I cried. I don't want it.
Fool.
Stan shot to his feet.
The spell must remain in the pocket. It is activated only when a male descendant of the dead man willingly and by his own hand fits the pants onto his body.
A male descendant?
Horror flooded my veins.
You mean these are
made from the skin of your ancestor? Yes.
Ah!
I desperately clawed at the pants. I didn't want to wear my great-grandfather or anyone else, but they were invulnerable. Stan's eyes gleamed.
I've been watching you, Amir Fadlan, waiting for my chance to give them to you.
I remembered the shadow crossing my window and once again almost vomited.
Where's Blitzen? What have you... Ding-a-ling.
The bell over the store's front door jangled. Amir? Blitzen? Anybody? A voice asked. Geez, I could rob this place blind and no one would know it. I sucked in my breath.
Alex.
Alex Fierro was a gender-fluid inherite from Hotel Valhalla and Samira's half-sibling. He sounded male at the moment and a little annoyed.
You know this person.
Stan said it to me like a statement, not a question.
If you value their life, you will remain quiet. I, too, know how to wield dark magic.
He gave me a warning look, rearranged his expression to pleasant, and hurried out front.
Good afternoon. May I be of assistance?
I had a partial view of Alex through the curtain. In his eye-catching pink and green outfit and dyed green hair, he looked more at home in Blitzen's best than I ever would. But he didn't see me, and I didn't dare draw his attention. Stan obviously had more nasty surprises up his sleeve.
Who are you? Alex asked. Where's Blitz?
I am Stan. The dwarf has gone to his apartment to retrieve necessary fashion supplies.
Alex leaned an elbow on the counter. Stan, huh? Well, Stan, I'm looking for a guy who came here to buy an outfit for a 50th wedding anniversary. Tall, fit, and attractive, with a faint scent of falafel. Has he been in?
I have seen no such person.
Well, maybe I could pick out something for him. Heck, I might get a few things for myself, too.
No, we are closing now. Good day.
Stan moved to the door and opened it for Alex.
Sheesh, hold your horses, pal. I gotta call his fiancée first.
Alex pulled out his cell phone and thumbed a number. A muffled ringtone sounded from my jeans on the dressing room bench. Alex's ringtone. He was calling my phone. But if I answered it, Stan might put a spell on...
Whoops, wrong number.
Alex hung up and dialed again.
Samira? Yeah, I'm at Blitz's. This guy Stan says the dwarf isn't here and that Amir hasn't been in. He won't sell me anything because they're closing, like, right now.
Alex listened for a moment, then laughed.
I'll definitely bring that, so when you see him, you can let him have it.
What did Alex mean by that? I wondered. Alex hung up.
She is so not happy.
You will leave now.
Yeah, yeah.
Alex pushed off the counter and sauntered out. Stan locked the store door and returned to the dressing room. Without warning, he grabbed my arm and twisted it behind my back. Pain exploded in my shoulder.
It is time to go.
Go where?
No need to worry about that, my pet,
said Stan, as that is exactly what you are now, my pet. Going any place with him seemed like a very, very bad idea. Stalling, on the other hand, seemed like a terrific plan.
Wait, what about the gold? Shouldn't we, you, bring it?
Stan laughed.
The Nobrook will give an abundant supply. Endless.
Can't I at least put my jeans back on? They'll fit over the necro pants.
I almost lost my lunch saying the word.
And hide them from prying eyes.
Who would notice?
Stan scoffed.
Heimdall.
The guardian's name just popped into my head. With his far-seeing gaze, he could spot trouble in the nine worlds when he wasn't gazing at his phablet.
He and I have a special connection. He even took a selfie with me.
Stan paused, considering.
Very well.
He released my arm.
But don't try anything foolish.
Naturally, I tried something foolish. Instead of putting on my jeans, I snatched up the nearest weapon, my left sneaker, and whipped it at his head. With one lightning-quick move, Stan caught my sneaker in one hand and recaptured my arm with the other.
A shoe? He growled. Who throws a shoe? Honestly.
He shoved me through the curtain and then stopped short. Sam stood in the middle of the store. With a spear of brilliant light in hand and wearing a suit of chainmail with a helmet over her green hijab, she looked drop-dead dangerous. If our religion didn't forbid it, I would have kissed her.
Let him go.
Sam's voice radiated Valkyrie power. Amir belongs to me. My heart swelled with pride. I felt like we could take on the whole world together, and...
Not anymore.
Stan snarled.
As long as he wears the Nobrook, he is bound to me.
Oh. Sam looked confused for a second. I pointed helplessly at my pants. She nodded and said,
Well then, we'll just have to unbind him.
I heard a zinging sound behind me. Stan stiffened and dropped my arm like a hot potato. I spun to find Alex holding one end of his golden garrote like a leash. The other end was wrapped tightly around Stan, pinning his arms to his sides. Stan spit out a string of curse words.
Oh, put a sock in it.
Sam grabbed a pair of argyles and stuffed them into Stan's mouth. Alex, meanwhile, eyed my legs. Nice pants.
Yeah, not really.
I told them the disgusting truth about my attire. Gross, Alex said.
There's more.
I showed them the paper with the spell on it. Sam grimaced.
Dark magic. I hate dark magic.
Light magic, though. She touched the tip of her spear to the paper, and it vanished in a puff of blood-red smoke.
Light magic comes in handy.
Stan let out a muffled howl of fury. Hey, Amir! Alex pointed at the necropants. Let's shuck 'em.
Alex!
Sam cried, blushing. Alex rolled his eyes. I meant get them off. In the back room, obviously. He added when Sam blushed an even deeper shade of red. Here, you hold Stan's leash. He gave Sam his end of the garrote, took her spear, and followed me into the dressing room. He raised his eyebrows at the pile of gold coins, then turned to me. Hold still.
What are you... Hey!
With three quick and too close for comfort flicks of the spear tip, Alex slashed the pants from my legs. I guess the light magic overpowered the dark once again. The pieces crumbled into drifts of dead skin, which slowly disintegrated into dust.
Huh. That's not something you see every day, Alex said.
Then he glanced at my boxers and made a face.
Or those.
He tossed me my jeans and turned his back so I could dress in semi-private.
What tipped you off? About Stan, I mean.
I asked. Couple of things, Alex replied. He referred to Blitzen as the dwarf, and claimed you hadn't been in. Knowing how terrified you are of Sam,
I am not.
I thought it was unlikely you'd skip the shopping spree, so I tested his story and called your phone. When I heard my ringtone, I knew he was lying about you being here. But the biggest clue? He refused to sell me anything. I mean, come on! He gestured to his pink cashmere sweater vest and tight lime green pants. A real clothing salesman would have seen dollar signs the minute I walked into the store. He nudged the gold coins with his rose-colored boot. But I guess he had all the money he needed.
And more where that came from.
I shuddered.
He was going to use me as his own private ATM. Forever.
Dude. Alex laid a comforting hand on my shoulder. That would have sucked.
If you boys are ready,
Sam called,
I'd like to phone Blitzen, make sure he's okay. I want to check in with Odin, too. He'll know what to do with this creep. Hang on.
I scooped up the coins from the floor.
I'm taking these for the chase space,
I told Alex, referring to our friend Magnus's shelter for homeless children.
Anonymous donation for the kiddos, except for this one.
I put a coin on the counter by the register, then grabbed the dark blue trousers, a pink silk shirt, and a matching paisley vest. Samira chose my tie.
I still think I rocked that blue tux,
I told her as we bagged my purchases.
Oh, Amir.
She smiled sweetly and leaned in close, making my heart thump.
If you ever wear that again,
she whispered,
I'll skin you alive.
Nita Valier. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. By Blitzen. Gathering supplies from my apartment in Nita Valier was the first item on my day's agenda. Not on that agenda, fleeing an angry dwarf in a jet-propelled wheelchair. And yet there I was, racing through the dark streets of my home world with Eitree Jr., my old enemy, and I do mean old. The guy was one step shy of fossilization. In hot pursuit. Apparently he was still miffed because I beat him in a recent crafting contest, or because I won by sabotaging his handiwork. Either way, he was a sore loser.
I'm gaining on you, he wheezed.
Junior's scream was joined by the squeal of burning rubber. He whizzed by me in a blur, clinging to the wheelchair's armrests as if his life depended on it. Which perhaps it did, as he seemed out of control. Correction, he was most definitely out of control.
Boom!
Junior crashed headlong into an unlit forge. The chair bounced back and toppled over, wheels spinning and jets sputtering in the dirt. Junior looked dazed, but unhurt. Dwarves came running from every direction. That was my cue to leave. I still needed some things from my apartment, but I didn't go there. If Junior came after me again, that'd be the first place he'd look. What he might do if he found me... Well, let's just say vengeance-seeking dwarves usually hack first and ask questions never. And I wasn't wearing my chainmail vest. Darting from one alley to another, I zigzagged my way through a maze of unfamiliar streets. At one point, I fell face-first in a mud puddle, totally ruining my lavender overcoat. When I finally stopped to catch my breath, I was in a part of Nita Valier I'd never been before. It reminded me of a sketchy section of downtown Boston I'd warned Magnus to avoid. I put up my collar and started walking. Asking for directions to my neighborhood was out. The few dwarves I passed either avoided making eye contact or rudely mocked my mud-soaked coat. To be fair, they would have mocked it even if it were clean. No appreciation for fashion, dwarves. I came to a windowless tavern. Muffled pinging and dinging sounds came from within. Not my first choice of sanctuary, but better than roaming the streets aimlessly. I ducked inside. The interior was dimly lit, even by Nidavellir standards, except for the row of pachinko machines, a cross between a vertical pinball game and a coin-operated gumball dispenser. They blinked and flashed with garish-colored lights that clashed horribly with the dark wood and red-checkered decor. Seeing those games brought back painful memories of someone I was once connected to and hoped to stay disconnected from. And then there was the smell. It took all of my willpower not to press my pocket square to my nose as I took a seat at the bar. The bartender stood at the far end, polishing the inside of a brass mug. I raised a finger to get his attention. "Hey, pal, I don't suppose you could tell me how to get to Kenning Square from here?" He spat into the mug, then continued wiping it with his filthy rag. "Play, drink, or get out." "Play? Oh, you mean pachinko. The thing is, I'm not much of a gambler." "Play, drink, or get out." "I'm not much of a drinker, either." "Play, drink, or..." The door banged open, and a sour-faced dwarf came in. My heart plummeted. He was one of Junior's cronies. I slid off the stool. "You know what? I think I'll play." I hurried to a machine tucked away in a corner and inserted a coin. The game board went dark. "What the..." An extremely short but strong-looking dwarf emerged from the shadows. The machine's power cord dangled from his hand. "You owe me a quarter," I said huffily. The minuscule muscle man stepped closer and menaced my midriff with a scowl.
"Someone wants to see you," he said.
I cut my eyes toward the front of the bar, where Junior's henchman was questioning the bartender. "If it's that guy, I'm not interested." The burly dwarf glared up at me, then kicked open a hidden door next to the machine and stepped aside.
"In back, now."
I would have refused, except I heard the bartender say,
"Yeah, he's here. Now play, drink, or get out."
"Right. In back. Now." I darted through the opening. The door closed with a quiet click behind me. The back room was as dimly lit as the bar. A massive oak desk, beautifully carved, clearly a one-of-a-kind piece, took up much of the space. Behind it was a hand-tooled leather chair with brass rivets, its back to me.
"Hello?" I ventured. "You wanted to see me?"
The chair rotated with agonizing slowness. I held my breath, waiting to see who sat in it. It was empty.
"Ha ha, very funny. You got me, whoever you are."
Laughter gurgled from the side wall. A light suddenly blazed, illuminating a large fish tank. There were no fish in it, though. Just a severed bearded head bobbing in the water next to a plastic treasure chest. I groaned. "Mimir, I should have known." Mimir, an ancient god and my sometime employer, had a body once. Then he tried to pull a fast one on the veneer. He dispensed wise advice through Honir, the god of indecision, and made them think he was a sage. When the veneer discovered the deception, they decapitated Mimir. He survived from the neck up thanks to Odin's magic and the waters of the Well of Knowledge at the roots of Yggdrasil. He can usually be found there still, dishing out intel to supplicants in exchange for their servitude. I'd been his servant for a few years, long story, but even now that I was free, he still sometimes showed up in other bodies of water, usually to make my life miserable. The head bobbed to the surface.
"Hey, Blitz," Mimir said. "Long time no see. Pull up a seat. We got things to discuss. That's why I brought you here."
"What do you mean, brought me here?" Mimir chuckle bubbled. "A little wheelchair sabotage, a little magical manipulation of certain alleyways, bada bing, bada boom, and here you are. So take a seat and have a listen." I drew myself up to my full 5 feet 5 inches,
Odin freed me from your service, remember? Mimir sloshed with annoyance.
Yeah. Thing is, the worlds might be in trouble if you don't act on what I'm about to tell you. Now you interested in what I gotta say?
I huffed as I sat in the leather chair. Why me? I'm listening.
Right. You ever heard of a dwarf named Alvis?
No.
Nasty piece of work. Anyway, he's plotting to kill Thor on account of Alvis was supposed to marry Thor's daughter Thrud. Only Thor changed his mind at the last minute and petrified the guy instead. Someone fixed Alvis up with a little water, so now he is back to normal, and he is peeved. When he found out Thor was heading to Nidavellir on his jog through the Nine Worlds...
Thor's jog through... I held up a hand. Never mind, it's Thor. I should know better than to ask. As I was saying, Alvis is planning to take his revenge. Mimir floated down to the treasure chest and, using his chin, pressed a button to open it. Out popped a card, which he grabbed in his teeth, brought back to the surface, and offered to me. I removed it gingerly from between his chompers. It was a plastic laminated map of Nidavellir.
See that X? Mimir asked. My sources say that's where Alvis will attack. Be there. Stop him. I estimate you've got 2 hours to come up with a plan to save the Thunder God.
Me? Save Thor? I scoffed. He can take care of himself. Mimir did a spit take.
You don't get it. You've got to do the job without letting Thor realize he was ever in danger. That means zero contact with the Thunder God. You can't even call out his name. If he finds out about Alvis, he could get mad enough to zap all the dwarves. Boom!
Before I could ask further questions, like why his sources couldn't deal with Alvis themselves, Mimir yanked a plug at the bottom of the tank with his teeth and was sucked down the drain, leaving me with a dripping map and no idea what to do. And I was still out a quarter from the pachinko machine. At least I got back to my apartment safely, thanks to directions from the minuscule dwarf thug. Once inside, I studied the map. I recognized the X's location, a steep cliff overlooking a river I had once fallen into with my buddy Hearthstone. We'd washed up in Mimir's well of knowledge, which was how we ended up bound in service to him in the first place. Knowing the X's location was the plus in the situation. On the minus side, the only way I could think of to stop Alvis, aside from killing or maiming him, which I was not going to do, I had enough enemies in Nidavellir already, would be to replicate what Thor did and petrify Alvis. Then I could revive him with fresh running water once the Thunder God was out of danger. There was just one catch. Petrification required sunlight, something Nidavellir lacked. Okay, 2 catches. If the sunlight hit me, I'd turn into a statue too. A well-dressed one. But still. I paced the apartment, made myself a snack, paced some more, checked the time, panicked, paced some more. Sunlight. Where am I going to get sunlight? I searched the room for inspiration. I picked up an expando duck, my handcrafted metal figurine that thwarted enemies by growing to immense size and crushing them. Would it solve my problem with Alvis, though? I didn't think so. Still holding the duck, my gaze landed on Hearthstone's tanning bed. My elf friend used its simulated sunlight to keep him healthy when he came to visit. I looked from the duck to the bed and back again. Suddenly, the wheels in my brain started turning. What if I built a smaller version of the tanning bed, I asked the duck, but tweaked the light so that instead of a soft warm glow, it shot out a powerful concentrated beam of sunlight when I opened it. That could work, right? I made the duck nod, then got busy. 45 minutes later, I had crafted a perfect handheld replica of Hearth's bed. When I opened the clamshell, away from my face, a burst of brilliant sunlight shone out. I quickly snapped it shut again. Probably not going to be a big seller in Nidavellir, I acknowledged, but hopefully it'll do the trick. With no time to lose, I selected a stylish ninja outfit from my closet, fitted dark jeans and a black cashmere hoodie with a front pocket for the mini bed, and hurried to the riverside. I hid myself in the shadows. But either Alvis was a no-show or Mimir's sources were wrong, because no one else, angry dwarf or jogging god, was anywhere in sight. Or so I thought.
Screech, screech.
Nidavellir is an underground world with domed cavern ceilings overhead instead of sky. The scratching sound had come from above me. I looked up and saw a dwarf clinging to a stalactite. One end of a rope was wrapped around his waist, the other was attached to a second stalactite far in front of him and directly over the street where Thor was likely to run. Jammed in Alvis's belt was a club bigger than he was. It didn't take a genius to figure out his plan, swing down like a pendulum and club Thor in the head. This presented my plan with two unanticipated problems. One, I wasn't sure how far my sunbeam would shoot. The Nidavellir darkness might swallow it before it reached Alvis on the ceiling. I'd have to wait for him to swing down. That meant hitting a moving target. Problem number two, assuming I petrified the dwarf, I had to be sure he swung past or over Thor, not into him. Then a third problem arose. The ground started shaking with measured thuds, which meant I'd run out of time.
Thor!
Alvis's furious whisper echoed off the cavern walls. Heart pounding, I pulled out the mini-bed. The footfalls drew closer. Thor thundered around a bend in the distance. The sight of him in his tidy leatheries almost made me root for Alvis.
Rock, 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 rock. Rock, 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 rock,
Thor muttered in a loud monotone. Eyes glued to Alvis, I got into a crouch. Thor drew nearer. I huffed a few quick breaths to psych myself up. Then,
aye!
With a triumphant yell, Alvis let go of the stalactite. At the same time, I launched myself into Thor's path. I tucked, rolled, and caught a horrifying glimpse of his leather-clad god parts a split second before he tripped over me.
Rock, 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 whoa!
Thor pitched forward just as Alvis flew overhead, swinging for the fences. The dwarf's club swished through empty air. Thor righted himself and kept going.
Rock, rock. Rock, rock, rock.
I'd broken the zero contact instruction, but the thunder god seemed oblivious to my presence, so no harm done. As for the killer dwarf,
no!
Flailing his club, Alvis reached the swing's high point and came screaming, literally, back. I opened the mini-bed.
Zat!
Alvis's scream cut off. I watched as the now petrified dwarf sailed past. I know what it's like to be petrified. It stinks. So I had every intention of cutting Alvis free on his next pass-by and then dipping him in the river to restore him. But before I could, the stalactite attached to the rope broke. Alvis's momentum carried him over the cliff edge. He landed with a splash in the water below.
Oops.
I peered down, then waved my hand dismissively. Ah, he'll be fine.
Blitzen!
Junior suddenly appeared. He crutched toward me, with his rocket-powered walker and a lot of friends.
Get him, boys!
Ha! Eat light, Junior!
I unleashed the power of the mini-bed. Sadly, instead of a turn-you-to-stone laser beam, a weak glow enveloped Junior like a soft blanket. The charge had run out. A thin crust formed around him. It was nowhere near as dramatic as instant petrification, but it was startling enough to make the other dwarves pause. And that made me think about how I looked to them.
A dwarf who handcrafts a weapon that petrifies other dwarves? Not cool. Listen,